but if he had examined his emotions more closely, he would have recognized that he was truly saddened about separating from the dwarf. Catti Bree was waiting for them at the junction of the final passage that led to the open air.
"Sure that you're a sour pear this fine morning," she said as they approached. "But not to mind. The sun will put a smile on your faces."
"You seemed pleased at this parting,"
Wulfgar answered, a bit perturbed, though the sparkle in his eyes at the sight of the girl belied his anger.
"You know, of course, that I am to leave the dwarven town this day."
Catti Bree waved her hand nonchalantly.
"You will be back soon enough," she smiled, "and be happy for your going. Consider the lessons you will soon learn needed, if you're ever to reach your goals."
Brynner turned toward the barbarian. Wulfgar had never spoken with him about what lay ahead after the term of indenture, and the dwarf, though he meant to prepare Wulfgar as well as he could, hadn't honestly come to terms with Wulfgar's resolve to leave. Wulfgar scowled at the girl, showing her beyond doubt that their discussion of the unfulfilled vow was a private matter. Of her own discretion, Catti Bree hadn't intended to discuss the issue any further anyway. She simply enjoyed teasing some emotion out of Wulfgar. Catti Bree recognized the fire that burned in the proud young man. She saw it whenever he looked upon Brunner, his mentor, whether he would admit it or not. And she marked it whenever Wulfgar looked at her.
"I am Wulfgar, son of Beornigar,"
he boasted proudly, throwing back his broad shoulders and straightening his firm jaw.
"I have grown among the tribe of the Elk, the finest warriors in all of Icewind Dale. I know nothing of this tutor, but he will be hard-pressed indeed to teach me anything of the ways of battle."
Catti Bree exchanged a knowing smile with Brunner as the dwarf and Wulfgar passed her.
"Farewell, Wulfgar, son of Beornigar," she called after them. "When next we meet, I'll mark well your lessons of humility."
Wulfgar looked back and scowled again, but Catti Bree's wide smile diminished not at all. The two left the darkness of the mines shortly after dawn, traveling down through the rocky valley to the appointed spot where they were to meet the drow. It was a cloudless, warm summer day, the blue of the sky paled by the morning haze. Wulfgar stretched high into the air, reaching to the limits of his long muscles. His people were meant to live in the wide expanses of the open tundra, and he was relieved to be out of the stifling closeness of the dwarven-made caverns. Drisdo Urden was at the spot waiting for them when they arrived. The drow leaned against the shadowed side of a boulder, seeking relief from the glare of the sun. The hood of his cloak was pulled low in front of his face as further protection. Drizzt considered it the curse of his heritage that no matter how many years he remained among the surface dwellers, his body would never fully adapt to the sunlight. He held himself motionless, though he was fully aware of the approach of Brunner and Wulfgar. Let them make the first moves, he thought, wanting to judge how the boy would react to the new situation. Curious about the mysterious figure who was to be his new teacher and master, Wulfgar boldly walked over and stood directly in front of the drow. Drizzt watched him approach from under the shadows of his cowl, amazed at the graceful interplay of the huge man's corded muscles. The drow had originally planned to humor Brunner in his outrageous request for a short while, then make some excuse and be on his way. But as he noted the smooth flow and spring of the barbarian's long strides, an ease unusual in someone his size, Drizzt found himself growing interested in the challenge of developing the young man's seemingly limitless potential. Drizzt realized that the most painful part of meeting this man, as it is with everyone he met, would be Wulfgar's initial reaction to him. Anxious to get it over with, he pulled back his hood and squarely faced the barbarian. Wulfgar's eyes widened in horror and disgust.
"A dark elf!" he cried incredulously. "Sorcerous dog!"
He turned on Brunner as though he had been betrayed.
"Surely you cannot ask this of me. I have no need nor desire to learn the magical deceits of his decrepit race."
"He'll teach ye to fight no more," Brunner said.
The dwarf had expected this. He wasn't worried in the least, fully aware, as was Catti Bree, that Drizzt would teach the overly proud young man some needed humility. Wulfgar snorted defiantly.
What can I learn of fighting from a weakling elf? My people are bred as true warriors.
He eyed Driz with open contempt.
Not trickster dogs like his kind.
Driz calmly looked to Brunner for permission to begin the day's lesson. The dwarf smirked at the barbarian's ignorance and nodded his consent. In an eye blink, the two scimitars leaped from their sheaths and challenged the barbarian. Instinctively, Wulfgar raised his warhammer to strike. But Drizzt was the quicker. The flat sides of his weapon slapped in rapid succession against Wolfgar's cheeks, drawing thin streaks of blood. Even as the barbarian moved to counter, Drizzt spun again one of the deadly blades in a declining arc, its razor edge diving at the back of Wolfgar's knee. Wulfgar managed to slip his leg out of the way, but the action, as Drizzt had anticipated, put him off balance. The drow casually slipped the scimitars back into their leather scabbards as his foot slammed into the barbarian's stomach, sending him sprawling into the dust, the magical hammer flying from his hands.
"Now that ye understand each other,"
declared Brunner, trying to hide his amusement for the sake of Wulfgar's fragile ego,
"I'll be leaving ye."
He looked questioningly at Driz to make sure that the drow was comfortable with the situation.
"Give me a few 10 days," Driz answered with a wink, returning the dwarf's smile.
Brunner turned back to Wulfgar, who had retrieved Aegis Fang and was resting on one knee, eyeing the elf with blank amazement.
"Heed his words, boy,"
the dwarf instructed one last time,
"or he'll cut ye into pieces small enough for a vulture's gullet."
For the first time in nearly 5 years, Wulfgar looked out beyond the borders of Ten Towns to the open stretch of Icewind Dale that spread wide before him. He and the drow had spent the remainder of their first day together hiking down the length of the valley and around the eastern spurs of Kelvin's Cairn. Here, just above the base of the northern side of the mountain, was the shallow cave where Driz made his home. Sparsely furnished with a few skins and some cooking pots, the cave had no luxuries to speak of. But it served the unpretentious drow ranger well, allowing him the privacy and seclusion that he preferred above the taunts and threats of the humans. To Wulfgar, whose people rarely stayed in any place longer than a single night, the cave itself seemed a luxury. As dusk began to settle over the tundra, Drizzt, in the comfortable shadows deeper in the cave, stirred from his short nap. Wulfgar was pleased that the drow had trusted him enough to sleep easily, so obviously vulnerable, on their first day together. This, coupled with the beating Drizzt had given him earlier, had caused Wulfgar to question his initial outrage at the sight of a dark elf.
"Do we begin our sessions this night, then?" Drizzt asked.
"You are the master,"
Wulfgar said bitterly. "I am only the slave."
"No more slave than I," replied Drizzt. Wulfgar turned to him curiously.
"We are both indebted to the dwarf," Drizzt explained. "I owe him my life many times over, and thus have agreed to teach you my skill in battle. You follow an oath that you made to him in exchange for your life. Thus you are obliged to learn what I have to teach. I am no man's master, nor would I ever want to be."
Wulfgar turned back to the tundra. He didn't fully trust Drizzt yet, though he couldn't figure out what ulterior motives the drow could possibly be pursuing with the friendly facade.
"We fulfill our debts to Brunner together," said Drizzt.
He empathized with the emotions Wulfgar was feeling as the young man gazed out over the plains of his homeland for the first time in years.
"Enjoy this night, barbarian. Go about as you please and remember again the feel of the wind on your face. We shall begin at the fall of tomorrow's night."
He left them to allow Wulfgar the privacy he desired. Wulfgar could not deny that he appreciated the respect the drow had shown him. During the daytime, Drizzt rested in the cool shadows of the cave while Wulfgar acclimated himself to the new area and hunted for their supper. By night, they fought. Drizzt pressed the young barbarian relentlessly, slapping him with the flat of a scimitar every time he opened a gap in his defenses. The exchanges often escalated dangerously, for Wulfgar was a proud warrior and grew enraged and frustrated at the drow's superiority. This only put the barbarian at a further disadvantage, for in his rage, all semblance of discipline flew from him. Drizzt was ever quick to point this out with a series of slaps and twists that ultimately left Wulfgar sprawled on the ground. To his credit, though, Drizzt never taunted the barbarian or tried to humiliate him. The drow went about his task methodically, understanding that the first order of business was to sharpen the barbarian's reflexes and teach him some concern for defense. Drizzt was truly impressed with Wulfgar's raw ability. The incredible potential of the young warrior staggered him. At first he feared that Wulfgar's stubborn pride and bitterness would render him untrainable, but the barbarian had risen to the challenge. Recognizing the benefits he could reap from one as adept with weapons as Drizzt, Wulfgar listened attentively. His pride, instead of limiting him into believing that he was already a mighty warrior and needed no further instruction, pushed him to grab at every advantage he could find that would help him to achieve his ambitious goals. By the end of the first 10 days, during those times he could control his volatile temper, he was already able to deflect many of Drizzt's cunning attacks. Drizzt said little during that first 10 days, though he would occasionally compliment the barbarian about a good parry or counter, or more generally on the improvement Wulfgar was showing in such a short time. Wulfgar found himself eagerly anticipating the drow's remarks whenever he executed an especially difficult maneuver, and dreading the inevitable slap whenever he foolishly left himself vulnerable. The young barbarian's respect for Drizzt continued to grow. Something about the drow, living without complaint in stoic solitude, touched Wulfgar's sense of honor. He couldn't yet guess why Drizzt had chosen such an existence, but he was certain from what he had already seen of the drow that it had something to do with principles. By the middle of the second 10 days, Wulfgar was in complete control of Aegis Fang, twisting its handle and head deftly to block the two whirring scimitars, and responding with cautiously measured thrusts of his own. Drizzt could see the subtle change taking place as the barbarian stopped reacting after the fact to the scimitar's deft cuts and thrusts and began recognizing his own vulnerable areas and anticipating the next attack. When he became convinced that Wulfgar's defenses were sufficiently strengthened, Drizzt began the lessons of attack. The drow knew that his style of offense would not be the most effective mode for Wulfgar. The barbarian could use his unrivaled strength more effectively than deceptive feints and twists. Wulfgar's people were naturally aggressive fighters, and striking came more easily to them than parrying. The mighty barbarian could fell a giant with a single, well-placed blow. All that he had left to learn was patience. Early one dark, moonless night, as he prepared himself for the evening's lesson, Wulfgar noticed the flare of a campfire far out on the plain. He watched, mesmerized, as several others sprang suddenly into sight, wondering if it might even be the fires of his own tribe. Drizzt silently approached, unnoticed by the engrossed barbarian. The drow's keen eyes had noted the stirrings of the distant camp long before the firelight had grown strong enough for Wulfgar to see.
"Your people have survived," he said to comfort the young man.
Wulfgar started at the sudden appearance of his teacher.
"You know of them?"
he asked. Drizzt moved beside him and stared out over the tundra. "Their losses were great at the Battle of Bryn Shander," he said, "and the winter that followed bit hard at the many women and children who had no men to hunt for them. They fled west to find the reindeer, banding together with other tribes for strength. The peoples still hold to the names of the original tribes, but in truth there are only two remaining, the tribe of the elk and the tribe of the bear." "You are the tribe of the elk, I believe," Drizzt continued, drawing a nod from Wulfgar. "Your people have done well. They dominate the plain now. And though more years will have to pass before the people of the tundra regain the strength they held before the battle, the younger warriors are already coming into manhood." Relief flooded through Wulfgar. He had feared that the Battle of Bryn Shander had decimated his people to a point from which they could never recover. The tundra was doubly harsh in the frozen winter, and Wulfgar often considered the possibility that the sudden loss of so many warriors, some of the tribes had lost every one of their menfolk, would doom the remaining people to slow death.
"You know much about my people," Wulfgar remarked.
"I have spent many days watching them," Drizzt explained, wondering what line of thought the barbarian was drawing. "Learning their ways and tricks for prospering in such an unwelcoming land." Wulfgar chuckled softly and shook his head, further impressed by the sincere reverence the drow showed whenever he spoke of the natives of Icewind Dale. He had known the drow less than 2 10-days, but already he understood the character of Drizzt Do'Urden well enough to know that his next observation about the drow was true to the mark.
"I'll wager you even fell deer silently in the darkness, to be found in the morning light by people too hungry to question their good fortune."
Drizzt neither answered the remark nor changed the set of his gaze, but Wulfgar was confident in his guess.
"Do you know of Ishtag?"
the barbarian asked after a few moments of silence.
"He was king of my tribe, a man of many scars and great renown."
Drizzt remembered the one-eyed barbarian well. The mere mention of his name sent a dull ache into the drow's shoulder, where he had been wounded by the huge man's heavy axe.
"He lives," Drizzt replied, somewhat shielding his contempt. "Ishtag speaks for the whole of the north now. None of true enough blood remain to oppose him in combat, or speak out against him to hold him in check."
"He is a mighty king,"
Wulfgar said, oblivious to the venom in the drow's voice.
"He is a savage fighter," Drizzt corrected.
His lavender eyes bore into Wulfgar, catching the barbarian completely by surprise with their sudden flash of anger. Wulfgar saw the incredible character in those violet pools, an inner strength within the drow whose pure quality would make the most noble of kings envious. "You have grown into a man in the shadow of a dwarf of indisputable character," Drizzt scolded. "Have you gained nothing for the experience?" Wulfgar was dumbfounded and couldn't find the words to reply. Drizzt decided that the time had come for him to lay bare the barbarian's principles and judge the wisdom and worth of teaching the young man.
"A king is a man strong of character and conviction, who leads by example and truly cares for the sufferings of his people," he lectured. "Not a brute who simply rules because he is the strongest. And I should think you would have learned to understand the distinction."
Drizzt noted the embarrassment on Wulfgar's face and knew that the years in the dwarven caves had shaken the very ground that the barbarian had grown on. He hoped that Brunner's belief in Wulfgar's sense of conscience and principle proved true, for he too, like Brunner years before, had come to recognize the promise of the intelligent young man and found that he cared about Wulfgar's future. He turned suddenly and started away, leaving the barbarian to find the answers to his own questions.
"The lesson?"
Wulfgar called after him, still confused and surprised.
"You have had your lesson for this night,"
Drizzt replied without turning or slowing.
"Perhaps it was the most important that I will ever teach."
The drow faded into the blackness of the night, though the distinct image of lavender eyes remained clearly imprinted in Wulfgar's thoughts. The barbarian turned back to the distant campfire and wondered. 15. On the Wings of Doom. They came in under the cover of a violent squall line that swept down upon 10 towns from the open east. Ironically, they followed the same trail along the side of Kelvin's cairn that Drizzt and Wulfgar had traveled just 2 10-days earlier. This band of Verbeek, though, headed south toward the settlements rather than north to the open tundra. Though tall and thin, the smallest of the giants, they were still a formidable force. A frost giant led the advance scouts of Akar Kessel's vast army. Unheard beneath the howling blasts of wind, they moved with all speed to a secret lair that had been discovered by orc scouts in a rocky spur on the southern side of the mountain. There was barely a score of the monsters, but each carried a huge bundle of weapons and supplies. The leader pressed on toward its destination. Its name was Bigrin, a cunning and immensely strong giant whose upper lip had been torn away by the ripping maw of a huge wolf, leaving the grotesque caricature of a smile forever stamped upon its face. This disfigurement only added to the giant's stature, instilling the respect of fear in its normally unruly troops. Akkar Kessel had hand-picked Bigrin as the leader of his forward scouts, though the wizard had been counseled to send a less conspicuous party, some of Hishtag's people, for the delicate mission. But Kessel held Bigrin in high regard and was impressed with the enormous amount of supplies the small band of Verbi could carry. The troop settled into their new quarters before midnight and immediately went about fashioning sleeping areas, storage rooms, and a small kitchen. Then they waited, silently poised to strike the first lethal blows in Akkar Kessel's glorious assault on Ten Towns. An orc runner came every couple of days to check on the band and deliver the latest instructions from the wizard, informing Bigrin of the progress of the next supply troop that was scheduled to arrive. Everything was proceeding according to Kessel's plan, but Bigrin noted with concern that many of his warriors grew more eager and anxious every time a new runner appeared, hoping that the time to march to war was finally upon them. Always the instructions were the same, though: stay hidden and wait. In less than 2 10-days, in the tense atmosphere of the stuffy cave, the camaraderie between the giants had disintegrated. Verbeeg were creatures of action, not contemplation, and boredom led them inescapably to frustration. Arguments became the norm, often leading to vicious fights. Bigrin was never far away, and the imposing frost giant usually managed to break up the scuffles before any of the troops were seriously wounded. The giant knew beyond doubt that it could not keep control of the battle-hungry band for much longer. The fifth runner slipped into the cave on a particularly hot and uncomfortable night. As soon as the unfortunate orc entered the common room, it was surrounded by a score of grumbling Verbeeg.
"What's the news, then?" one of them demanded impatiently.
Thinking that the backing of Akkar Kessel was sufficient protection, the orc eyed the giant in open defiance.
"Fetch your master, soldier," it ordered.
Suddenly, a huge hand grabbed the orc by the scruff of the neck and shook the creature roughly.
"Yous was asked a question, scum," said a second giant. "What's the news?"
The orc, now visibly unnerved, shot back an angry threat at its giant assailant.
"The wizard will peel the skin from your hide while you watch." "I heard enough," growled the first giant, reaching down to clamp a huge hand around the orc's neck.
It lifted the creature clear off the ground, using only one of its massive arms. The orc slapped and twisted pitifully, not bothering the Verbeeg in the least.
"Oh, squeeze its filthy neck," came one call.
"Put its eyes out and drop it in a dark hole," said another.
Bigrin entered the room, quickly pushing through the ranks to discover the source of the commotion. The giant wasn't surprised to find the Verbeeg tormenting an orc. In truth, the giant leader was amused by the spectacle, but had understood the danger of angering the volatile Akkar Kessel. It had seen more than one unruly goblin put to a slow death for disobeying, or simply to appease the wizard's distorted taste for pleasure.
"Put the miserable thing down," Bigrin ordered calmly.
Several groans and angry grumbles sprang up around the frost giant.
"Bash its head in," cried one. "Bites its nose," yelled another.
By now the orc's face had grown puffy from lack of air, and it hardly struggled at all. The Verbeeg holding it returned Bigrin's threatening stare for a few moments longer, then tossed its helpless victim at the frost giant's booted feet.
"Keep it, then," the Verbeeg snarled at Bigrin. "But if it wags its tongue at me again, I'll eat it for sure." "I've had too much of this hole," complained a giant from the back of the ranks, "and a whole tale of filthy dwarves for the taking."
The grumbling renewed with heightened intensity. Bigrin looked around and studied the seething rage that had crept into all of the troops, threatening to bring down the whole lair in one sudden fit of irrepressible violence.
Tomorrow night we starts going out to see what's about us.
Biggrin offered in response. It was a dangerous move, the Frost Giant knew, but the alternative was certain disaster.
Only three at a time, and no one's to know.
The orc had regained a measure of composure and heard Biggrin's proposal. It started to protest, but the giant leader silenced it immediately.
Shut your mouth, orc dog,
Biggrin commanded, looking to the Verbeeg that had threatened the runner and smiling wryly.
Or I'll let me friend eat.
The giants howled their glee and exchanged shoulder claps with their companions, comrades again. Biggrin had given them back the promise of action, though the giant leader's doubts about its decision were far from dispelled by the lusty enthusiasm of the soldiers. Shouts of the various dwarven recipes the Verbeegs had concocted, Dwarf of the Apple and Bearded, Basted, and Baked, to name two, rang out to overwhelming hoots of approval. Biggrin dreaded what might happen if any of the Verbeeg came upon some of the short folk. Biggrin let the Verbeeg out of the lair in groups of three, and only during the nighttime hours. The giant leader thought it unlikely that any dwarves would travel this far north up the valley, but knew that it was taking a huge gamble. A sigh of relief escaped from the giant's mouth whenever a patrol returned without incident. Simply being allowed out of the cramped cave improved the Verbeeg's morale tenfold. The tension inside the lair virtually disappeared as the troops regained their enthusiasm for the coming war. Up on the side of Kelvin's cairn, they often saw the lights of Caer Conig and Caer Dinnaval, Tourmaline across the way to the west, and even Bryn Shander far to the south. Viewing the cities allowed them to fantasize about their upcoming victories, and the thoughts were enough to sustain them in their long wait. Another 10 days slipped by. Everything seemed to be going along well. Witnessing the improvement the small measure of freedom had brought to his troops, Biggrin gradually began to relax about the risky decision. But then, two dwarves, having been informed by Brunner that there was some fine stone under the shadow of Kelvin's cairn, made the trip to the north end of the valley to investigate its mining potential. They arrived on the southern slopes of the Rocky Mountain late one afternoon, and by dusk had made camp on a flat rock beside a swift stream. This was their valley, and it had known no trouble in several years. They took few precautions. So it happened that the first patrol of Verbeeg to leave the lair that night soon spotted the flames of a campfire and heard the distinctive dialect of the hated dwarves. On the other side of the mountain, Drizdo Urden opened his eyes from his daytime slumber. Emerging from the cave into the growing gloom, he found Wulfgar in the customary spot, poised meditatively on a high stone, staring out over the plain. "You long for your home?" the drow asked rhetorically. Wulfgar shrugged his huge shoulders and answered absently.
"Perhaps."
The barbarian had come to ask many disturbing questions of himself about his people and their way of life since he had learned respect for Drizzt. The drow was an enigma to him, a confusing combination of fighting brilliance and absolute control. Drizzt seemed able to weigh every move he ever made in the scales of high adventure and indisputable morals. Wulfgar turned a questioning gaze on the drow.
"Why are you here?"
he asked suddenly. Now it was Drizzt who stared reflectively into the openness before them. The first stars of the evening had appeared, their reflections sparkling distinctively in the dark pools of the elf's eyes. But Drizzt was not seeing them. His mind was viewing long past images of the lightless cities of the drow in their immense cavern complexes far beneath the ground. "I remember," Drizzt recalled vividly, as terrible memories are often vivid, "the first time I ever viewed this surface world. I was a much younger elf then, a member of a large raiding party. We slipped out from a secret cave and descended upon a small elven village." The drow flinched at the images as they flashed again in his mind. "My companions slaughtered every member of the wood elf clan, every female, every child." Wulfgar listened with growing horror. The raid that Drizzt was describing might well have been one perpetrated by the ferocious tribe of the Elk.
"My people kill," Drizzt went on grimly. "They kill without mercy."
He locked his stare onto Wulfgar to make sure that the barbarian heard him well.
"They kill without passion."
He paused for a moment to let the barbarian absorb the full weight of his words. The simple yet definitive description of the cold killers had confused Wulfgar. He had been raised and nurtured among passionate warriors, fighters whose entire purpose in life was the pursuit of battle glory, fighting in praise of Tempus. The young barbarian simply could not understand such emotionless cruelty. A subtle difference, though, Wulfgar had to admit. Drow or barbarian, the results of the raids were much the same. "The demon goddess they serve leaves no room for the other races," Drizzt explained. "Particularly the other races of elves."
"But you will never come to be accepted in this world," said Wulfgar. "Surely you must know that the humans will ever shun you."
Drizzt nodded. "Most," he agreed. "I have few that I can call friends. Yet I am content. You see, barbarian, I have my own respect. Without guilt, without shame." He rose from his crouch and started away into the darkness.
"Come," he instructed. "Let us fight well this night, for I am satisfied with the improvement of your skills, and this part of your lessons nears its end."
Wulfgar sat a moment longer in contemplation. The drow lived a hard and materially empty existence, yet he was richer than any man Wulfgar had ever known. Drizzt had clung to his principles against overwhelming circumstances, leaving the familiar world of his own people by choice to remain in a world where he would never be accepted or appreciated. He looked at the departing elf, now a mere shadow in the gloom.
"Perhaps we two are not so different,"
he mumbled under his breath.
"Spies!" whispered one of the Verbeeg.
"Stupid for spying with a fire," said another.
"Let's go squash 'em,"
said the first, starting toward the orange light.
"The boss said no," the third reminded the others. "We's to watch, but no squashing."
They started down the rocky path toward the small camp of the dwarves, with as much stealth as they could muster, which made them about as quiet as a rolling boulder. The two dwarves were well aware that someone or something was approaching. They drew their weapons as a precaution, but figured that Wulfgar and Drizzt, or perhaps some fishermen from Caer Conig, had seen their light and were coming to share dinner with them. When the camp came into sight just below, the Verbeeg could see the dwarves standing firm, weapons in hand.
"They seen us,"
said one giant, ducking into the darkness.
"Oh, shut up,"
ordered the second. The third giant, knowing as well as the second that the dwarves could not as yet know who they were, grasped the second's shoulder and winked evilly.
"If they seen us," it reasoned, "we's got no choice but to squash 'em."
The second giant chuckled softly, poised its heavy club on its shoulder, and started for the camp. The dwarves were completely stunned when the Verbeeg came bounding around some boulders just a few yards from their camp and closed in on them. But a cornered dwarf is pound for pound as tough as anything in the world, and these were of the clan from Mithril Hall, who had been waging battles on the merciless tundra for all of their lives. This fight would not be as easy as the Verbeeg had expected. The first dwarf ducked a lumbering swing from the lead Verbeeg and countered by slamming his hammer onto the monster's toes. The giant instinctively lifted its injured foot and hopped on one leg, and the seasoned dwarf fighter promptly cut it down by bashing him in the knee. The other dwarf had reacted quickly, launching his hammer with pinpoint accuracy. It caught another giant in the eye and spun the creature crashing into some rocks. But the third Verbeeg, the smartest of the three, had picked up a stone before it had charged and returned the dwarf's throw with tremendous force. The stone deflected off the unfortunate dwarf's temple, snapping his neck violently to the side. His head lolled about uncontrollably on his shoulders as he fell dead to the ground. The first dwarf would have soon finished off the giant he had felled, but the last of the monsters was upon him at once. The two combatants parried and countered, with the dwarf actually gaining a bit of an advantage. An advantage that lasted only until the giant, who had been struck in the eye by the thrown hammer, recovered enough to jump in. The two Verbeeg rained blow after heavy blow at the dwarf. He managed to dodge and deflect them for a short while, but then one landed squarely on his shoulder and dropped him to his back. He found his breath in a short time, for he was as tough as the stone he had landed on, but a heavy boot stomped on him and held him prone.
"Squish him," begged the injured giant the dwarf had cut down. "Then we takes him to the cook." "We does not," growled the giant above the dwarf.
It ground its huge boot into the earth, slowly pressing the life from the unfortunate victim.
"Big Grin'll take us to the cook if he finds out."
The other two grew genuinely afraid when they were reminded of the wrath of their brutal leader. They looked helplessly to their more cunning companion for a solution.
"We puts them and their filthy things in a dark hole and says nothing more of this."
Many miles to the east, in his solitary tower, Akar Kessel waited patiently. In the autumn, the last and largest of the trading caravans would roll back into Ten Towns from Luskan, laden with riches and supplies for the long winter. His vast armies would be assembled and on the move by then, marching gloriously to destroy the pitiful fishermen. The mere thought of the fruits of his easy victory sent shivers of delight through the wizard. He had no way of knowing that the first blows of the war had already been struck. 16. Shallow Graves. When Wulfgar awakened just before midday, rested from his long night's work, he was surprised to see Drizzt already up and about, busily preparing a pack for a long hike.
"Today we start a different type of lesson," Drizzt explained to the barbarian. "We'll set out right after you've had something to eat."
"To where?"
"First the dwarven mines," replied Drizzt. "Brunner will want to see you so he might measure your progress for himself." He smiled at the big man. "He shan't be disappointed."
Wulfgar smiled, confident that his newfound prowess with a hammer would impress even the grumpy dwarf.
"And then?"
"To Termalane, on the banks of Mare Dualden. I have a friend there, one of my few," he added quickly with a wink, drawing a smile from Wulfgar.
"A man named Agorwal.
I want you to meet some of the people of Ten Towns so that you might better judge them."
"What have I to judge?" Wulfgar asked angrily.
The drow's dark and knowing eyes bore into him. Wulfgar clearly understood what Drizzt had in mind. The dark elf was trying to personalize the people the barbarians had declared enemies, to show Wulfgar the everyday existence of the men, women, and children who might have been victims of his own heavy pole if the fight on the slopes had turned out differently. Fearless in any battle, Wulfgar was truly frightened of facing those people. Already the young barbarian had begun to question the virtues of his warlike people. The innocent faces he would encounter in the town his people had casually marked for burning could well complete the destruction of the foundations of his entire world. The two companions set out a short time later, retracing their steps around the eastern trails of Kelvin's Cairn. A dusty wind was blowing in steadily from the east, assaulting them with fine grains of stinging sand as they crossed the exposed face of the mountain. Though the glaring sun was especially draining on Drizzt, he kept a strong pace and did not stop for rest. In the late afternoon, when they finally rounded a southern spur, they were exhausted but in good spirits.
"In the shelter of the mines, I had forgotten how cruel the tundra wind could be," laughed Wulfgar. "We'll have some protection below the rim of the valley," said Drizzt.
He patted the empty water skin at his side.
"Come, I know where we might refill these before we continue."
He led Wulfgar westward, below the southern slopes of the mountain. The drow knew of an icy stream a short distance away, its waters fed from the snowmelt atop Kelvin's Cairn. The brook sang merrily as it danced across the stones. Nearby birds cackled and cawed at the approach of the companions, and a lynx slipped silently away. Everything appeared as it should, But from the moment they arrived on the large flat rock that was commonly used by travelers as a campsite, Drizzt sensed that something was terribly wrong. Moving in tentatively, he searched for some tangible sign that would confirm his growing suspicions. Wulfgar, though, dived belly down onto the stone and dunked his sweat and dust-streaked face eagerly into the cold water. When he pulled it back out, the luster had returned to his eyes, as if the icy water had given him back his vitality. But then the barbarian noticed crimson stains on the rock, and followed their gory trail to the hairy piece of skin that had gotten caught on the sharp tip of a stone just above the rushing stream. Both skilled trackers, the ranger and barbarian, had little difficulty in ascertaining that a battle had recently been fought on this spot. They recognized the coarse hair on the patch of skin as a piece of beard, which of course led them to think of the dwarves. They found three sets of giant-sized footprints nearby. Following a tangent line of tracks that stretched southward a short distance to a sandy patch of ground, they soon found the shallow graves.
"Not Brunner," Drizzt said grimly, examining the two corpses. "Younger dwarfs. Bundo, son of Fellhammer, and Dorgas, son of Argo Grimblade, I believe." "We should make all haste to the mines," Wulfgar suggested.
"Soon," replied the drow. "We still have much to learn about what happened here, and tonight may be our only chance. Were these giants simply passing rogues, or are they lairing in the area?
And are there more of the foul beasts?" "Brunner should be told," Wulfgar argued.
"And so he will," said Drizzt.
"But if these three are still nearby, as I believe they are since they took the time to bury their kill, they might well return for some more sport when the night falls."
He directed Wulfgar's gaze to the west, where the sky had already begun to take on the pink shades of twilight.
"Are you ready for a fight, barbarian?" With a determined grunt, Wulfgar brought Aegis Fang down from his shoulder and slapped the adamantite handle across his free hand. "We shall see who finds sport this night."
They moved behind the secrecy of a rocky bluff south of the flat stone and waited as the sun passed below the horizon and the dark shadows deepened into evening. It wasn't very long a wait, for the same Verbeek that had killed the dwarves the night before were again the first out of the lair, anxious to seek fresh victims. Soon the patrol came crashing over the mountain slopes and onto the flat rock beside the stream. Wulfgar immediately moved to charge, but Drizzt stayed him before he gave their position away. The drow had every intention of killing these giants, but he wanted to see if he could learn anything about why they were here first.
"Drats and dingers," grumbled one of the giants. "Not a dwarf to be found."
"Rotten luck it is," groaned another. "And our last night out, too."
The creature's companions looked at it curiously.
"The other group's coming in tomorrow,"
the Verbeek explained.
"Our numbers'll double, and stinking ogres and orcs to boot, and the boss ain't to let us out till everything's calmed again." "A score more in that stinking hole," complained one of the others. "Rightly to send us flipping." "Let's be moving then," said the third. "No hunting here and no night for wasting."
The two adventurers behind the bluff tensed reflexively when the giant spoke of leaving.
"If we can get to that rock," Wulfgar reasoned,
unknowingly pointing to the same boulder that the giants had used for their ambush the night before.
"We'll have them before they even realize we're here."
He turned anxiously to Drizzt, but backed off immediately when he saw the drow. The lavender eyes burned with a luster that Wulfgar had never witnessed before.
"There are only three of them," said Drizzt,
his voice holding a fragile edge of calm that threatened to explode at any moment.
"We need no surprise."
Wulfgar didn't quite know how to take this unexpected change in the dark elf.
"You taught me to seek every advantage," he said cautiously. "In battle, yes," answered Drizzt. "This is vengeance. Let the giants see us. Let them feel the terror of impending doom."
The scimitars suddenly appeared in his slender hands as he walked out around the bluff, his steady stride unnervingly holding the unswerving promise of death. One of the giants yelled out in surprise, and they all froze in their tracks when they saw the drow step out before them. Apprehensive and confused, they formed a defensive line across the flat rock. The Verbeeg had heard legends of the drow, even some where the dark elves had joined forces with giants, but the sudden appearance of Drizzt caught them totally by surprise. Drizzt enjoyed their nervous twitchings, and he held back to savor the moment.
"What are ye fur, then?"
one of the giants asked cautiously.
"A friend of dwarves,"
Drizzt replied with a wicked laugh. Wulfgar leaped out beside him as the largest of the giants charged without hesitation, but Drizzt stopped him cold. The drow pointed one of his scimitars at the advancing giant and stated with deathly calm, "You are dead." At once the Verbeeg was limbed by purplish flames. It yelled in terror and retreated a step, but Drizzt stalked it methodically. An overwhelming impulse came over Wulfgar to throw the warhammer, as though Aegis Fang was exerting a will of its own. The weapon whistled through the night air and exploded into the giant standing in the middle, hurling its broken body into the swollen stream. Wulfgar was truly awestricken with the power and deadliness of the throw, but he worried about how effectively he could fight off the third giant with a small dagger, the only weapon he had left. The giant recognized the advantage as well and charged wildly. Wulfgar went for the dagger, but instead he found Aegis Fang magically returned to his grasp. He had no idea of this special power Brunner had imbued upon the weapon, and he had no time now to pause and ponder. Terrified, but having nowhere to run, the largest giant attacked Drizzt with abandon, giving the elf even more of an advantage. The monster lifted its heavy club high, the movement exaggerated by rage, and Drizzt quickly poked his pointed blades through the leather tunic and into the exposed belly. With only a slight hesitation, the giant continued its mighty swing, but the agile drow still had ample time to dodge the blow. And as the swing threw the lumbering giant off balance, Drizzt jabbed two more tiny holes into its shoulder and neck.
"Are you watching, boy?" the drow called gaily to Wulfgar. "It fights like one of your kind."
Wulfgar was heavily engaged with the remaining giant, easily maneuvering Aegis Fang to deflect the monster's powerful blows, but he was able to catch glimpses of the battle to his side. The scene painted a grim reminder of the value of what Drizzt had taught him, for the drow was toying with the Verbeeg, using its uncontrolled rage against it. Again and again the monster reared for a killing blow, and each time Drizzt was quick to strike and dance away. Verbeeg blood flowed freely from a dozen wounds, and Wulfgar knew that Drizzt could finish the job at any time, but he was amazed that the dark elf was enjoying the tormenting game he played. Wulfgar hadn't yet struck a solid blow on his opponent, biding his time as Drizzt had taught him, until the enraged Verbeeg wore itself out. Already the barbarian could see that the giant's blows were coming with less frequency and vigor. Finally, lathered in sweat and breathing heavily, the Verbeeg slipped up and dropped its guard. Aegis Fang pounded home once and then again, and the giant toppled in a lump. The Verbeeg fighting Drizzt was down on one knee now, the drow having deftly sliced out one of its hamstrings. When Drizzt saw the second giant fall before Wulfgar, he decided to end the game. The giant took one more futile swing, and Drizzt waited in behind the flow of the weapon, jabbing with one scimitar and this time following the cruel point with his full weight. The blade slipped through the giant's neck and upward into its brain. Later, one question pressed upon Drizzt as he and Wulfgar, resting on one knee, considered the results of their handiwork.
"The hammer?" he asked simply.
Wulfgar looked down at Aegis Fang and shrugged.
"I do not know," he answered honestly. "It returned to my hand by its own magic."
Drizzt smiled to himself. He knew. How wondrous the crafting of Brunner, he thought, and how deeply the dwarf must care for the boy to have given him such a gift.
"A score of Verbeeg coming," groaned Wulfgar.
"And another 20 already here," added Drizzt. "Go straight away to Brunner," he instructed. "These three just came from the lair. I shouldn't have much trouble backtracking and finding out where the rest of them are." Wulfgar nodded his assent, though he looked upon Drizzt with concern. The uncharacteristic smolder he had seen in the drow's eyes before they attacked the Verbeek had unnerved the barbarian. He wasn't quite sure just how daring the dark elf might be.
"What do you mean to do when you find the lair?"
Driss said nothing but smiled wryly, adding to the barbarian's apprehension. Finally, he eased his friend's worries.
"Meet me back at this spot in the morning. I assure you that I shan't begin the fun without you."
"I shall return before the first light of dawn,"
Wulfgar replied grimly. He spun on his heel and disappeared into the darkness, making his way as fast as he could under starlight. Driz, too, started away, tracing the trail of the three giants westward across the face of Kelvin's cairn. Eventually, he heard the baritone voices of giants, and shortly thereafter, he saw the hastily constructed wooden doors that marked their lair, cunningly concealed behind some brush halfway up a rocky foothill. Drizzt waited patiently, and soon saw a second patrol of three giants emerge from the lair. And later on, when they returned, a third group came out. The drow was trying to discern if any alarms had gone up due to the absence of the first patrol. But Verbeek were almost always unruly and undependable, and Drizzt was reassured from the small snatches of conversation he was able to hear that the giants assumed their missing companions had either gotten lost or simply deserted. When the drow slipped away a few hours later to set his next plans, he was confident that he still had the element of surprise working for him. Wulfgar ran all through the night. He delivered his message to Brunner and started back to the north without waiting for the clan to be roused. His great strides took him to the flat rock more than an hour before the first light, even before Drizzt had returned from the lair. He went back behind the bluff to wait, his concern for the drow growing with every passing second. Finally, able to stand the suspense no longer, he sought out the trail of the Verbeek and started tracking it toward the lair, determined to discover what was happening. He hadn't gone 20 feet when a hand cuffed him on the back of the head. Reflexively, he spun to meet his attacker, but his astonishment turned to joy when he saw Drizzt standing before him. Drizzt had returned to the rock shortly after Wulfgar, but had remained hidden, watching the barbarian to see if the impulsive young warrior would trust in their pact or decide to take matters into his own hands. "Never doubt an appointed rendezvous until its hour has passed," the drow scolded sternly, touched as he was by the barbarian's concern for his well-being. Any response that might have been coming from Wulfgar was cut short, for suddenly the two companions heard a gruff shout from a familiar voice.
"Get me a pig-squealing giant to kill!"
Brunner called from the flat stone by the stream behind them. Enraged dwarves can roll along at an incredible speed. In less than an hour, Brunner's clan had assembled and started after the barbarian, nearly matching his frantic pace.
"Well met," Drizzt called as he moved to join the dwarf. He found Brunner eyeing the three dead Verbeek with grim satisfaction.
50 iron-visaged, battle-ready dwarves, more than half the clan, stood around their leader.
"Elf,"
Brunner greeted with his customary consideration.
"A lair, is it?"
Drizzt nodded. "A mile to the west. But let that be not your first concern. The giants there are not going anywhere, but they are expecting guests this very day."
"The boy told me," said Brunner. "A score of reinforcements."
He swung his axe casually.
"Somehow I get the feeling they're not going to make the lair. Any notion of where they're to be coming in?"
"North and east is the only way," Drizzt reasoned. "Somewhere down Icewind Pass, around the north of Lac Dinashir."
"Your people will greet them, then?"
"Of course," replied Brunner. "They'll be passing Dale Drop for certain."
A twinkle edged his eye.
"What do ye mean to do?" he asked Drizzt. "And what of the boy?"
"The boy remains with me," Drizzt insisted. "He needs rest. We'll watch over the lair."
The eager gleam in Drizzt's eye gave Brunner the impression that the drow had more in mind than watching.
"Crazy elf," he said under his breath. "Probably take on the whole lot of them by himself."
He looked around curiously again at the dead giants.
"And win!"
Then Brunner studied the two adventurers, trying to match their weapons with the types of wounds on the Verbeek.
"The boy fell too," Drizzt replied to the dwarf's unspoken question.
A hint of a rare smile found its way onto Brunner's face.
Two to your one, eh? You're slipping, Elf.
Nonsense, Drizzt retorted. I recognized that he needed the practice. Brunner shook his head, surprised by the extent of the pride he felt toward Wulfgar, though of course he wasn't about to tell the boy and swell his head.
You're slipping,
he called again as he moved up to the head of the clan. The dwarves took up a rhythmic chanting, an ancient tune that had once echoed off the silvery halls of their lost homeland. Brunner looked back at his two adventurous friends and honestly wondered what would be left of the giant lair by the time he and his fellow dwarves returned. 17. Vengeance. Tirelessly, the heavily laden dwarves marched on. They had come prepared for war, some carrying heavy packs and others shouldering the great weight of large wooden beams. The drow's guess about which direction the reinforcements would be coming from seemed the only possible way, and Brunner knew exactly where to meet them. There was only one pass that afforded easy access down into the rocky valley. Dale Drop, up on the level of the tundra, yet below the southern slopes of the mountain. Though they had marched without rest throughout half of the night and most of the morning, the dwarves set right to work. They had no idea what time the giants would be coming in, though it probably wouldn't happen under the light of day. They wanted to make certain that everything was ready. Brunner was determined to take out this war party quickly and with minimal losses to his people. Scouts were posted on the high spots of the mountainside, and others were sent out onto the plain. Under Brunner's direction, the remainder of the clan prepared the area for an ambush. One group set to digging a trip trench, and another began reassembling the wooden beams into two ballistae. Heavy crossbowmen sought out the best vantage points among the boulders on the nearby mountainside from which to launch their assault. In a short time all was ready, but the dwarves still did not stop to rest. They continued canvassing every inch of the area, searching for any possible advantage they could gain over the Verbeeg. Late in the day, the sun already dipping its lowest edges below the horizon, one of the lookouts on the mountain announced that he had sighted a dust cloud growing in the distant east. Soon after, a scout came in from the plain to report that a troop of 20 Verbeeg, a few ogres, and at least a dozen orcs was making speed toward Dale Drop. Brunner signaled the crossbowmen into their concealed positions. The ballista crews inspected the camouflage on the great bows and added perfecting touches. Then the strongest fighters of the clan, with Brunner himself among them, dug themselves into small holes along the worn path of Dale Drop, carefully cutting the tufts of thick grass so that they could roll it back over them. They would strike the first blows. Drizzt and Wulfgar had taken up a position among the boulders of Kelvin's cairn above the giant's lair. They had slept in shifts throughout the day. The drow's only concern for Brunner and his clan was that some of the giants would leave the lair to meet the incoming reinforcements and spoil the dwarves' advantage of surprise. After several uneventful hours, Drizzt's worries proved true. The drow was resting in the shadow of a ledge while Wulfgar kept watch over the lair. The barbarian could hardly see the wooden doors concealed behind the brush, but he clearly heard the creak of a hinge when one of them opened. He waited for a few moments before moving to rouse the drow to make sure that some of the giants were actually coming out of the hole. Then he heard giants talking within the blackness of the open door, and suddenly a half-dozen Verbeeg emerged into the sunlight. He turned to Drizzt but found the ever-alert drow already standing behind him, his large eyes squinting as he watched the giants in the bright light.
"I do not know what they are about," Wulfgar told Drizzt.
"They're seeking their missing companions," Drizzt replied. He'd heard, more clearly with his keen ears than his friend, distinct pieces of the conversation that had taken place before the giants emerged. These Verbeeg had been instructed to exercise all possible caution, but they were to find the long-overdue patrol, or at least determine where the missing giants had gone off to. They were expected to return that same night, with or without the others.
"We must warn Brunner," said Wulfgar.
This group will have found their dead companions and alerted the lair long before we could return, replied Drizzt. Besides, I believe that Brunner has enough giants to deal with already.
What then? Asked Wulfgar.
Surely the lair will be tenfold more difficult to defeat if they expect trouble. The barbarian noticed that the simmering flame had returned to the drow's eye. The lair will be none the wiser if these giants never return, Drizzt said matter-of-factly, as though the task of stopping 6 hunting Verbeeg was a minor obstacle. Wulfgar listened in disbelief, though he had already guessed what Drizzt had in mind. The drow noted Wulfgar's apprehension and smiled broadly. Come, boy, he instructed, using the condescending title to stir up the barbarian's pride. You have trained hard for many 10 days in preparation for a moment such as this. He sprang lightly across a small chasm on the stone ledge and turned back on Wulfgar, his eyes sparkling wildly as they caught the afternoon sun. Come, the drow repeated, beckoning with one hand. There are only 6 of them. Wulfgar shook his head resignedly and sighed. During the 10 days of training, he had come to know Drizzt as a controlled and deadly swordsman who weighed every feint and strike with calm precision. But in the last 2 days, Wulfgar had seen an overly daring, even reckless side of the drow. Drizzt's unwavering confidence was the only thing that convinced Wulfgar that the elf wasn't suicidal, and the only thing that compelled Wulfgar to follow him against his own better judgment. He wondered if there was any limit to how far he would trust the drow. He knew then and there that Drizzt would someday lead him into a situation from which there was no escape. The giant patrol traveled southward for a short while, Drizzt and Wulfgar secretly in tow. The Verbeeg found no immediate trace of the missing giants and feared that they were getting too close to the dwarven mines, so they turned sharply back to the northeast, in the general direction of the flat rock where the skirmish had taken place.
We must move on them soon, Drizzt told his companion. Let us close in on our prey.
Wulfgar nodded. A short time later, they approached a broken area of jagged stones where the narrow path twisted and turned suddenly. The ground was sloping upward slightly, and the companions recognized that the path they traveled would move out to the rim of a small chasm. The daylight had faded enough to provide some cover. Drizzt and Wulfgar exchanged knowing glances. The time had come for action. Drizzt, by far the more battle-seasoned of the two, quickly discerned the mode of attack that offered the best chance of success. He motioned silently for Wulfgar to pause.
We have to strike and move away, he whispered, and then strike again. Not an easy task against a wary foe,